What's up, Magic fans? Welcome to Do You Believe in Magic? I hope you do. Make sure to follow us at DYBNMagic and follow our site, OrlandoPinstripedPost.com. What's up, Magic fans? Welcome to Do You Believe in Magic? And of course, we hope you do. I'm your host, Preston Ellis, and today we have some hope. The Magic have a pulse. The Magic gave the Cavaliers everything they could handle a few nights ago, and then some, before defeating the Celtics for the first time in Boston in 7 years and 14 tries. Talk about history. I think the last group of Magic to actually beat Boston was made up of Jameer Nelson, Vince Carter, Matt Barnes, Rashard Lewis, and Dwight Howard back in 2010. So we're definitely going to be covering that. But before that, I want to introduce you guys to Aaron Goldstone of Orlando Pinstripe Post. This is, I think, his third or fourth appearance. What's going on, Aaron?
What's going on, Preston? Thanks for having me back again.
Of course, man. Thanks for having the time. Always a pleasure having you. Do a great job on here, man. Before we get started and go any further, I just want to start off with that controversial Cavaliers play at the 11-second mark. Do you think that was a foul on Shelvin Mack?
I don't. You know, I think Shelvin Mack had all ball, but, you know, Isaiah Thomas is just so good at drawing fouls and, you know, kind of creating contact. And, I mean, he's an all-star level player, and he had the ball in a situation where, you know, he sold it. You know, that's the benefit of having those kind of all-star level players. You know, Shelvin Mack, I really like what he's brought to the team since Aflalo's been out. And you know, he's done in limited minutes, you know, everything and more that you could ask from him. But, yeah, I thought it was a pretty clean play. Maybe as Thomas was going up for the attempt, you know, maybe, you know, the all ball turned into some wrist action. I don't know. But, you know, it looked pretty clean to me.
All right, just to give you guys a little bit of background on what I'm talking about, with 15 seconds to play, Shelvin Mack appeared to tie up Isaiah Thomas, only to be whistled for the game-sealing foul that sent the Magic home losers at 103 to 104. Could have been a jump ball, but it was determined it wasn't. It got sent up to, in the review publicly on NBA.com, the league, it was sent to the league, and they concluded Mack's attempted tie-up affects Thomas's SQBR. If you didn't know what that means, you're not alone. I didn't either. It stands for speed, quickness, balance, rhythm. The report says Mack made contact with Thomas's arm before the ball and thus deems the call correct. You know, that goes all way above my head. Yeah, but just watching from what I saw, I thought it was one of those 50-50 calls. And unfortunately, in this instance, it went against the Magic, who could have been on a spectacular three-game win streak if that call goes the other way. Talk a bit about what you saw. It's hard to be really upset about that call, given that the Magic gave up 67 points in the first half, trailing by 20. But with that being said, a stunning comeback for the second time in a row that they've played the Cavaliers. The Magic just like spotting Cleveland with a nice lead. I think the last matchup was something around 132 to 125 when it was all said and done. This one, like I said, 104 to 103. Talk a bit, Aaron, about why the Magic like playing the Cavaliers so much.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I hate to blame a game, you know, on one call like that at the end. I mean, they really were the Magic just playing like trash in the first half, and it was going downhill pretty quickly. You know, just the effort and energy, you know, it just wasn't there. They got down by double digits quick. They were down by, you know, as much as 20 in the second quarter. It was rough. And I mean, Cleveland was like playing on air. Like, I mean, they were shooting a tremendous percentage from the field, and all of a sudden, you know, the Magic chipped away and they chipped away and they battled back. And, you know, we've actually seen that from them a couple times this year. Like, they battled back from these large deficits. And I don't know if maybe being down by 20 or 30 or whatever, you know, they play loose and they play kind of carefree, and you know, they chip away or whatever the reason may be. But yeah, they did find themselves in the game. They outscored Cleveland 56-37 in the second half of that game. Then when you couple that with the first three quarters they played in Boston, I mean, that's five quarters in a row, second half in Cleveland, first three in Boston, that they played quality opponents on the road. to their advantage, massively. I added up those five quarters, second half in Cleveland, first three in Boston. They outscored their opponents 146 to 108. So you just got to avoid the really, really bad quarters at this point. And the Magic, I think, are right there, at least being competitive.
Yeah, I was a little bit off on the score of the previous game on January 6th. It was 131 to 127, so I apologize for that. I wanted to get that right. Let's talk. The Magic are playing really well at this point. Like I said, they beat the Timberwolves. The Timberwolves were the hottest team in the NBA at the time. I want to say they were something like 12-3 since mid-December, and they were sporting the best record at that point. And the Celtics have lost two games in a row, and this one's a bit clunky because it's one of those Sunday afternoon games that is difficult to get a read on, kind of like the NFL Thursday night football. You never quite know what to expect going into this. But with that being said, the Magic were impressive. And part of how impressive they've been lately has been their energy level. One of the things that the guys often, lamented was coming out flat, not giving 100%. And so much of that was just chemistry. Fournier complaining about having Vucevic out of the lineup and the great chemistry the two of them share. Just kind of clunky having Jonathan Simmons in the starting lineup not playing as well. But these guys are starting to figure something out. And before I get into the game, the specifics of what went down, Kem Birch is getting a lot of playing time. And at the end of this one, he had two key offensive rebounds. But more than that, we just have to talk about his energy defensively. And like we said, those 50-50 balls that he always seems to come up with. Talk about how well Kem Birch is playing right now, Aaron.
Well, yeah, he's providing exactly what you would want out of a backup center in the NBA. I think he is a legitimate NBA defensive presence in the paint and rim protector. And, really, you just ask for energy, from that position coming off the bench. He gives up a little bit of height as an NBA center, but, he makes up for it in kind of being at the right place at the right time. Like you said, these 50-50 balls, he's long enough to, alter shots. He's like a plus rebounder. He, in limited minutes, has been piling up some blocks. So, look, Magic are in trouble if they're depending on Kem Birch for anything other than lobs and putbacks, like yesterday what he did in the fourth quarter. But, defensively, that's exactly what you want out of a backup center. That's really all they would need out of Biombo, but they don't have the right pieces around him. And the only difference is they're paying Biombo, $17 million a year and not league minimum. So, Kem Birch is basically providing similar type production at, 1/16th the value of Biombo, but he's been great. He's been exactly, what he needs to be.
Now, the Magic, I want to talk about the third quarter because we were just covering the Cavaliers recap and how good the Magic were in the second half. This one was all tied up in the first half. But in the third quarter, the Magic exploded. They won the quarter 32-12, keeping the Cavs one for their first 11 shots in addition to seven turnovers. Now, is this just a matter of the Cavaliers kind of taking a nap coming out of halftime? Or did the energy of the Orlando Magic really help to shut down guys like Marcus Smart and Rozier and Jason Tatum, who they held to 6-23 shooting on the game? Why were the Magic so successful in the third quarter?
Yeah, I do think it starts with shutting down Tatum. He entered yesterday, I believe, number one in the NBA in three-point percentage. And, on this podcast, I've ripped Jonathan Simmons, I think, every time I've gone on, so I have to be fair. And, he did a phenomenal job on Tatum. I don't know if it was a weird matchup or if it was just an off day for Tatum or what, but I believe he held him scoreless in the first half, and Tatum got going just a little bit in the fourth quarter when Simmons was on the bench with some foul trouble, but, completely held him in check. Orlando's bench outscored Boston's bench 38-8. Some notorious guys that sometimes kill the Magic, Marcus Smart, Rozier, they were just completely non-factors, outplayed by DJ Augustine and outplayed by Sheldon Mack and Mario Hezonja. And I think that's really where the Magic made a difference and built that lead up to a point where, they were able to have a slow fourth quarter, like a really slow fourth quarter, but still win the game. It was that progress they made in the third quarter with their bench unit.
Now, I want to talk a bit about Elfrid Payton. Of course, he was matched up on Kyrie Irving a bit for the game, who exploded for 40 points. I'll get the shooting numbers for that pretty soon. I think it was 16 of 23. But Elfrid Payton on the season, you know, I don't know how much stock you put into the plus minus. He's right at around negative five. But if you just look at his numbers, 13 points per game, 6.5 assists, 4 rebounds on 52% from the field, 39% from three. And lately, he's been very aggressive and it's been paying off. He pretty much lived in the paint in this one. 22 points on 9 of 16 with 16 rebounds. And I was wrong on those Kyrie numbers. It was 14 of 23. But Elfrid Payton was a big part of the reason that the Magic had 62 points in the paint in this one. And that's an insane number against the best defense in the NBA in the Boston Celtics. Although, like I said, this is their third drop game in a row. Talk a bit about Elfrid Payton. How good is he becoming? How good is it to see how aggressive he's been? And then also talk a bit about how much of Kyrie's explosion you put on Payton.
Yeah, so, you know, again, I've been kind of critical of Payton's defense. I'm not going to hold yesterday and Irving going off for 40 against him. It was just one of those Kyrie signature performances where he was just, especially in the first half, unconscious. He has, I think, 25 at the half, and it wasn't like he was getting a lot of uncontested shots at the rim. I mean, you know, the Magic were making Irving fire it from deep, and if he's hot, then he's hot, you know, so be it. But you know, that one really isn't on Payton as much as you would think. He put together two pretty solid performances, you know, 19 points against Cleveland, you know, 22 points against Boston. Those are two formidable, you know, opponents. But, you know, I think he found, especially against Cleveland, you know, matchups where he can take advantage of point guards that don't play at the same pace as he does. You know, Payton really struggles in the half court, offensively, defensively. I think we all, after 4 years, have figured that out. But, you know, Payton, when he's pushing the pace, you know, and really dictating the pace, even off of the other team's made basket, you know, he pushes the pace, beats everybody else down the court before they get set. And that's really where he's at his best. I think the team has figured that out now. They're a top 10 pace team in the NBA. They have been all year long, which is a little bit different than I know Frank Vogel has played with, you know, a different pace than he's played with before. But yeah, that's Peyton's bread and butter, is play in transition, you know, get easy baskets before the other team sets up, because once he has to play pick and roll basketball, you know, he really struggles.
I'm going to ask you this. I asked you this last time as well, but I think I'm just going to make it a habit of every podcast. Like everybody knows, Elfrid Payton is a restricted free agent. And while he has been the subject of trade talks, being that he'll be a restricted free agent, whoever does trade for him, if they so choose to do so, would have the opportunity to match any offer made by another team. However, they might not want to take that risk because, you know, let's say a team with deep pockets, although there aren't many of those teams coming in this summer, you know, offers him something to the tune of 4 years and $60 million. And that team doesn't want to trade for him. There might not be a market for him out there, at least at a substantial price. But with that being said, how well he's been playing lately, going into the summer, should he stick around in Orlando? How much are you offering Elfrid Payton to come back at this point, Aaron?
So I actually wrote an article before the season started, and we were just kind of going through some scenarios like that with both Aaron Gordon and Elfrid Payton, if they maybe were going to agree to like an early extension before the season started, what would those numbers look like? You know, obviously the team missed that deadline that was in October, but you know, if you run over the last 2 or 3 years, some of the advanced stats, whether it's, you know, plus minus or offensive wood chairs or value above replacement or whatever you want to look at, you know, everything kind of comes back to Payton's kind of a middle of the pack NBA point guard. He would be a pretty good, pretty elite backup point guard, but he's kind of a middle to bottom NBA starting point guard. At least that is what he's been. So when you sign him to a new deal, you have to kind of predict how much he's going to grow. Right now, he's at the same production level as like a Jeremy Lin, as like a Dennis Schroeder. And I'm not saying he's a comparable player. I'm just saying kind of what he provides. So you're already talking there at about the $12 to $14 million range. Some people might think Schroeder's a little bit overpaid. I'm looking at NBA salaries right now. Jordan Clarkson, $11.5 million. Patty Mills, $11 million. Austin Rivers, $12 million. So, you know, that sounds like a lot of money. You know, these salaries are really inflated with this new salary cap. I would be willing to pay him somewhere in the 10 to $11 million range without worrying that maybe that is a salary that hurts the salary cap, you know, the team's cap too much. If we're talking somewhere in the 13, 14 range, you know, now I'm thinking about, you know, passing just because we already know, I think, his limitations. I guess that's a long answer, but that's where I would go. Somewhere in the 10 to 12, maybe 12 and a half range. And after that, you know, it's a pass for me, I think.
No, that's a good take. And 4 years, $44 million, I think at this point is probably enough to lock him up, because you have to take into account that Elfrid Payton's not even averaging 30 minutes a game per year. So I'll just do this math in my head. But if you want to go per 36 at 52% shooting and 39% from three, that probably puts him somewhere around 15 and a half points, maybe 7.5 assists, 5 rebounds. Those are pretty good numbers. And those are definitely worth $11 million a year. But you also have to take into account his defense. And does he draw enough contact and get to the free throw line? And when he does, why does he shoot 63% from the free throw line? But this is stuff that we could talk about in future podcasts, and I'm sure that we will, especially with the trade deadline looming. He did go for 19-8 last night. Let's move right along to Evan Fournier, somebody who we need to play better. And like we said earlier, he definitely misses Nikola Vucevic in 33 minutes. He scored 17 points. We're talking about the Boston game. Sorry, these are numbers from the Cavaliers game. They're pretty close. 19 points on 8 of 19. He had some big clutch shots, including a runner, I want to say, at the 4-minute mark that put them up 8 and pretty much put them in a comfortable driver's seat for the remainder of the game. But like shooting 8 of 19, he did have some mistakes in this game, some bad rotations defensively, just not in the correct headspace, allowing for, you know, great playmaking by Kyrie Irving, who's somebody who's so intelligent. He's going to take advantage of that every time. Talk about Evan Fournier's performance, and not just in this game, but how it relates to the trade deadline, because he's probably the most popular name at this point who's discussed in trade talks. Several teams rumored to be interested, including the Utah Jazz, the New Orleans Pelicans, the Chicago Bulls, the Detroit Pistons. Not sure where the interest is coming from, who's drawing it up. Obviously, you probably have his agent peddling a lot of this information. But talk about his performance in this game, his performance lately, and how it's translating to his trade appeal.
Yeah, I mean, Cleveland is always, you know, a nightmare matchup for him, because it's inevitable that at some point he gets matched up trying to defend LeBron James. And, you know, that's clearly a tough, you know, task for anyone. But he just is in that weird position defensively where it's so difficult for him to match up with, you know, two guards are a little bit too athletic for him. He struggled yesterday, Fournier did, with Jaylen Brown. You know, Brown kind of went off in the first half, and then luckily Boston kind of moved away from him in the second half. But he has trouble a little bit. But, you know, offensively, he's still useful. You know, obviously he's a legitimate NBA threat from the three-point line. I think he's playing through some ankle stuff still. I mean, I look at him, I watch him play. I don't think he's 100%. You know, right now he's basically just a deep threat. That threat of dribble drive and kind of pump fake and attack the rim and backdoor cuts and some of the things that makes him more of a dual threat offensive player. He just doesn't have that kind of explosiveness right now. But I could definitely see why some teams are still sniffing around and are interested. He's 25 years old and he's already been in the NBA for 5 years. So, I mean, that's experience, that's production. And, you know, his contract's not really that awful. You know, there's a lot of years attached to it still, but it's manageable, I think.
Now let's talk a bit about, we'll go more into trade detail. We have plenty of time still, 2.5 weeks until that deadline comes, but we'll definitely keep the Evan Fournier news flowing. Let's talk a bit more about some of our role players, and we'll try to tie some of these guys together so we don't spend all day talking about each player's grade. But Shelvin Mack, somebody who's been a bit more impressive in the last two games against the Celtics, he had 10 points and 4 assists on just 5 of 8 shooting in only 12 minutes. And then you also had Jonathan Simmons doing Jonathan Simmons things, you know, being aggressive, coming up with loose balls and transition dunks. He had only 9 points, but it was on 4 of 7, 25 minutes. Pretty efficient game from him, played a lot of great defense. And like I said, does a lot of those Kem Birch type things, given the energy that the guys need to go on 25-8 third quarter runs against the Celtics. Talk about these two guys' performances and how it's translating to wins right now.
Yeah, I mean, and Shelvin Mack is just, you know, he's that, you know, example of just a consummate pro. You know, is ready when his number's called. You know, he doesn't always get consistent minutes. I'm looking at the last 5 games. You know, he's played 57 minutes in the last 5 games, but Friday the 12th at Washington, he didn't get any minutes. Tuesday against the Timberwolves, he only got 5 minutes. So it's sporadic, and he kind of never really knows when he's going to be called. But you look at the last 57 minutes that he's played, he's turned the ball over once. So, I mean, I don't know what else as a coach you can ask for. You know, you're going to put someone on there that you know is going to value and take care of the basketball. As we know, a lot of the guys in the Magic do have a tendency to be a little loose with the basketball. So he's going to take care of it. He's going to make good decisions. You know, he's not always going to shoot that well, but the energy the last couple games, at least, has been there. I mean, he's 10 for 13 in the last 2 games. He had a huge steal against Boston. The guys that were calling the game, you know, they made a point a couple times to say, you know, he was playing against his former college coach, you know, at Butler, Brad Stevens. So maybe there's a little extra juice there. But yeah, he's valuable. He's valuable to the Magic. I could see him being valuable to some other team down the road as the trade deadline gets closer, because his salary is not guaranteed next year. And, you know, at $6 million, it's sort of immovable if you just need some guy at the end of the bench. You know, he played minutes in the playoffs for Utah last year. I think he actually had to start some games that George Hill missed. So, you know, he's doing well. I don't know what else more you can ask for from him. Same thing with Birch. Sorry, go ahead, Preston.
No. I was just going to add on to that. I was just going to say you made an excellent point about how he's an expiring contract, and I wanted you to go a bit further into that before you talk about Birch and Simmons, is that there's a lot of teams out there that could use an able-bodied point guard who can give 15 minutes per game. And plus, they're not only buying that, they're also buying that expiring deal. As the listeners probably know, he only has $1 million of his contract guaranteed for next season. So that $6 million in space could be very valuable to an opposing team. Sorry, go ahead with what you were talking about, and also explain what you think that is worth, that $6 million in potential 2018 summer cap space.
Yeah, I mean, it's valuable because, you know, you can trade him to a team that maybe is just looking for an end-of-the-bench upgrade, and if they want any unwanted salary, they could exchange. But really, I mean, it's valuable to even a team that's not in, you know, the playoff hunt. You know, you look at a team like, I don't know, the Lakers or somebody that wants to shed salary. You trade $6 or $7 million worth of salary to Orlando and get Shelvin Mack back in return. And then you just release him next summer before his contract guarantees, and you've saved yourself, you know, $5, $6 million, whatever. So, you know, the Magic can go a couple ways with him, and it just makes them that much more flexible in a deal where he does become an asset. It's the salary cap game. He's not necessarily an asset right now on the floor, but he's an asset that can be used in multiple different, like, types of deals, I guess.
Yeah. Now continue with what you were saying about Birch and Jonathan Simmons.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, like I mentioned earlier, you know, Birch is just, you know, he's doing, I think, what he's been advertised to do. He's, you know, blocking shots and providing a ton of energy. And hopefully he's going to carve out more of an NBA role for himself. It looks like 19 minutes against Minnesota, 17 against Cleveland, 17 against Boston. He's settling in as the team's backup center. And interestingly enough, for a few games now, it seems like what Vogel's doing is he's splitting beyond those backup minutes between Spates and Birch, and he's also kind of backing off, you know, the 30-plus minutes that Biombo had been playing since Vucevic went out, bringing Biombo down to the 20 to 25-minute range, which makes a lot of sense. You know, Biombo is more of a backup center, plays Spates early, see if he kind of gets going and goes off. And if not, you've got Birch for 15 to 20 minutes, you know, to finish out the game. So it's kind of a crapshoot right now, but, you know, at least Birch and Biombo have similar skills.
Now let's move on to Mario Hezonja. Of course, he was given the news in November that the Magic are not picking up his option. He's going to be an unrestricted free agent this upcoming summer after only having played 3 years after having a number five overall designation. But he's been playing much better lately. He had 7 points against the Celtics in just 12 minutes. His three-pointer in the third quarter helped put them up by 19, which was their largest lead of the game. On 3 of 6 shooting, overall 50%. Pretty efficient, getting better defensively. In 9 starts, this is via Orlando Magic Daily. Thank you for this. He started 9 of the previous 18 games since December 9th. In those 9 starts, over 14 points a game, over 5 rebounds per game, 2 assists, 1 steal, 48% from the field, and 39% from the three-point line. That's a valuable player. That's in 30 minutes per game. And if he can continue these numbers in the next 6 games before the trade deadline comes, it's still an expiring. He's still going to be an unrestricted free agent. The best a team can hope for by trading for him. It's just being the first one to be able to have the conversation with him in June. What do you think Mario Hezonja's value is to the Magic right now? And let's do the same game we did with Elfrid Payton. Do you want him back and for how much?
Yeah, so Will and I think we mentioned this the last time we did a pod, but, you know, again, you want to give credit here to Frank Vogel, because I think he might have been the only one on the Hezonja Island that was calling for Hezonja to be a power forward, when I think a lot of us were kind of looking at each other like, what in the world is he talking about? But that move to primarily play power forward has kind of rejuvenated Hezonja's career a little bit, because maybe as a 2-3 wing player, his athleticism wasn't at an NBA level where we thought it would be. But as a power forward, like, honestly, for me, it's been Hezonja off the dribble and kind of, you know, attacking the rim, where he's created advantage over other bigger power forwards. You know, he wasn't beating anybody off the dribble, you know, that was a wing defender, but he actually does have some offensive kind of mismatches that he creates with his athleticism and run and jump ability as a 4. I don't know if any team is really going to trade for him at the deadline, because everybody kind of knows the story. He's going to be unrestricted free agent this summer. Like, why give up anything for him now if you can just try to sign him next summer? You know, I think the best course of action for the Magic is just continue to play him as many minutes as the team can down the stretch. Maybe if he is someone that Welton and Hammond want in their future plans, giving him minutes and that he's earned, by the way, and allowing him to kind of flourish and thrive in Orlando's system might kind of encourage him to re-sign, you know, as maybe this, okay, you've carved out a role in the NBA, you've accomplished something, you've earned it. We didn't just give you minutes. I know we didn't pick up your option, but now you've changed our mind. I mean, it's not completely out of the realm. But re-signing his own is probably, I would say, more unlikely than likely, but it's not impossible.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of is possibly providing a trade exception to the Magic. If there was some kind of 3-team deal for somebody who needed depth at the 3 and 4 position, you could possibly facilitate that through Phoenix, and somebody throws them a second round pick somewhere in exchange for the Magic getting a trade exception, and whatever team who needs the depth acquiring Mario Hezonja. But at this point, he's still a bit too raw. I don't think anybody's investing too much in adding him to their bench for their final 20 games. But with that being said, playing much better. Like we said, 22 years old. It looks like the arrow is pointing up for him. Let's move over to Nikola Vucevic. Before the Boston Celtics game, we got video of him doing some individual drills. It says that he's starting to get some strength back in his broken hand. Like I said, 2.5 weeks from the trade deadline, he would probably be the easiest chip to move. He's only got 1 year and $12.5 million left. Could definitely help someone this season if he is able to get that strength back in his broken right hand. Talk a bit about Nikola Vucevic. Do you want to see him try to fight his way back and just to involve himself in a trade? Or would you rather just let him sit for the rest of the year at this point and possibly build up his value for the summer?
Yeah, it's, I don't think any teams really are probably that concerned about, you know, his wrist. It's actually his left, you know, finger, thumb, whatever it is. So it's non-shooting. And I mean, honestly, I mean, you know, you're using it for rebounding as a big, you know, for grabbing, you know, post passes. But I mean, you're not dribbling a ton. You know, for me as a 7-footer, I would be more concerned about his conditioning and stuff. But because it's a hand, you know, there's really theoretically no reason why he can't be, you know, staying in shape and getting on a bike and running and stuff like that. So I think he'll be in shape, and I think he'll be ready at some point soon after the deadline. So I don't think teams are going to be scared away by his injury. And if he's not traded, then I'm sure the Magic would love for him to come back, because they can just kind of continue to showcase him and maybe move him over the summer, like, you know, a draft day trade or something like that. You know, they could always shut him down the last few days of the season if it comes down to jockeying for lottery position. But, you know, I do think he'll be back, whether it's with Orlando or someone else. And, you know, he'll still play the last couple months of the season. I don't see why not.
And we've got some other guys who are fighting their way back from injury. Of course, I'm referring to the top 10 pick, Jonathan Isaac, who had his severely sprained right ankle. He came back for 3 games, then he sprained it again, and he's in a rehab facility apparently right now working on that ankle. And Terrence Ross is supposedly going to be ready to return somewhere around mid-March. Apparently, he's just started running. Do you want to see these guys back at some point this season? Or same question as Nikola Vucevic, or would you rather them just stay at home, build up their strength, keep working through their individual drills, and just have them ready for next season?
I don't know what to think about, you know, Jonathan Isaac. I think we would all like to see him back on the court and finish his rookie season, you know, in a positive way. You know, I know the kid has been working and trying to stay involved, even though he can't get on the court. I'm sure that's frustrating. But, you know, the long game with him, you know, he's not going anywhere for 2, 3, 4 more years. So to rush him back at this point, you know, I would really make sure that doctors were confident, you know, multiple doctors were confident that he's not going to re-injure anything and that he's good to go. Just not really worth it to do any more damage to him, as his body is already kind of not fully matured yet. You know, I don't know what to think yet. I think we still need to hear more information about Isaac and his ankle before you make a call there. Terrence Ross, I would like to see him come back. I know it's a pretty significant injury. I don't know if he will come back this year, but like Vucevic, probably more than Vucevic, you want to see Ross come back so you can show other teams that he can still play, because I think Ross's deal is another one that's pretty easily tradable, you know, this summer, whether it's a draft day trade or whenever, because he's an expiring contract next year, probably doesn't fit into the plans, but you want to see him on the court so you can move him.
Now, this is just an overall question talking about the Orlando Magic season. They're 14-32 at this point. They've played their way out of the one seed where they sat for a whopping 4 days, I think, after the Hawks victory a few nights ago. And they're half a game up on the Sacramento Kings, who they're going to face tomorrow night, as well as the Atlanta Hawks, as I just said. They snapped their 14-game losing streak in Boston. They also broke their 10-game road losing streak. They've won 2 of 3. They've really shown a lot of life, a lot of spirit in the last 5 games. They are playing better. The guys are starting to figure stuff out. And one quote that Aaron Gordon said after the Boston game: "We're the same team, but we have found ourselves. We'll see how it goes." Just talk about, like we said, Nikola Vucevic sitting, Terrence Ross sitting, Jonathan Isaac sitting. The basic story here is a very divisive topic for Magic fans is, do you play to lose at this point? Do you trade these guys? Do you bench everyone? Or do you want to see this group intact? Put together a string of wins here. Obviously, the playoffs are not a likely scenario. They're 10 games back with just under 40 games left to play, something that's not likely barring a miracle, significant injuries to the Detroit Pistons or the Philadelphia 76ers, which isn't completely out of the realm of possibility given Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid's injury history. If they lose even one of those guys, that actually could be a more significant conversation. But at this point, what should the Magic be playing for, Aaron?
Yeah, I mean, I understand what you're asking. Preston, I actually saw just on Instagram post, a couple of posters were already kind of making comments here and there about yesterday's win. And, you know, it's just probably a little bit too early in the calendar to start, you know, really getting depressed over every single win opposed to increasing your percentages, because it's like you mentioned at the beginning of the show, it's been 8 years since Orlando had won in Boston, and they're the number one team in the Eastern Conference right now, even if they're struggling a little bit. So sometimes it's just, it's got to just feel good to get a win, you know, in that locker room for those guys. There'll be plenty of opportunities as the season goes on to lose games. As long as they're playing the right kind of people the right way, you know, I think everything takes care of itself. As the year goes on, you want to see them play Kim Birch in his 20s, Mario Hezonja in his 20s, Awundu in his 20s, Gordon, of course. You want to see those guys get as many minutes as possible. You don't want to see the veterans like Spates or Aflalo or anybody that's on an expiring get minutes over younger guys. And as long as you're doing that, you know, then, you know, it is what it is. Wins in January don't really stress me out. You know, Magic fans are just kind of bitter because of some of the wins in March and April the last few years that have caused, you know, the Magic to miss all-star caliber players by one or two picks. Yeah, we can start sweating wins that the team gets in March or April. But for now, you know, I'm not worried about playing well against the Cavs and the Celtics. I think they'll have plenty of time to lose.
You mentioned some young guys that you want to see get some minutes. Maurice Spates played, I think, 6 minutes against the Cavaliers, 8 minutes against the Celtics. And, of course, Kem Birch had 17. Awundu, I think, 4 minutes against the Cavaliers, 10 minutes against the Celtics. You mentioned you want to see more of these guys. Who are you, other than, of course, Maurice Spates, which wing are you taking minutes away from to get some more playing time out of Awundu?
Well, it'll just be interesting now that Aflalo's suspension has been served, that we'll just have to see kind of how the minutes go. But, you know, that's the first person I'm looking at. You know, Aaron Aflalo doesn't need to get any minutes over Wesley Awundu right now. I mean, Shelvin Mack has played really well, but I mean, in theory, ultimately, you know, he doesn't need to get minutes, you know, either. I want those minutes, you know, down the stretch to go to Awundu, just to see what the team has in Wes. You know, he's kind of, I don't know, I'm coming around a little bit. He does things that are not necessarily in the box score, but he does make winning plays. I kind of stood up out of my chair yesterday. There was this play I remembered where Boston had a 3-on-1 and Awundu was back defending, and he just kind of guessed right, and Boston dumped the ball off, and he defended, you know, a 1-on-3 fast break, and Boston didn't get anything out of it. You know, those kind of instincts. He just has pretty good floor instincts, and, you know, he's not a guy that is going to ever play 30 or 35 minutes a game, but I'd like to see him settle in at 15 to 20 consistently. He's already, you know, older than a lot of NBA rookies, so you got to see what you have in him.
All right. Quick prediction. We've got the Kings tomorrow in Orlando, followed by on Saturday traveling to Indianapolis to face the Pacers. How do you think the Magic fare in these two matchups?
I mean, I know Sacramento is a team that is right there with Orlando that we're battling in the Tankathon series, and they're going to kind of be going from West Coast to East Coast, and they've already made that transition of giving as many minutes as they can to younger prospects at the expense of Vince Carter and so forth. So I do think Orlando will keep it rolling. I think they will win at home against Sacramento, and then they will drop their contest against the Pacers in Indiana.
All right. Thank you so much to Aaron Goldstone and to you guys for listening. Remember, if you guys like what you're hearing, do us another favor, a search for Do You Believe in Magic on iTunes, and please give us a 5-star rating today. We appreciate it so much. And if you guys have any questions and you want them answered on the pod by guys like Aaron, like Will, like Evan, like Zach, please direct them to @PrestonEllis. And of course, follow Aaron @AaronGoldstone. Now, before we close this up, I just want to refer to The Price Group. This episode was brought to you by them. My wife and I purchased our first home a year ago, and we couldn't have been more impressed or appreciative of two guys and one girl specifically. We've been searching for 6 months with another realtor, getting nowhere, and with their help, We found our forever home. I don't know. It could be our forever home. I love it. But we found it in less than a month. And we even saved $10,000 off the seller's original price with these guys' help. Their award-winning team can help you if you want to buy, you want to sell, you want to invest, whatever your needs are. Ask for Robert Stack and Mark Rawmaker and tell them that Preston sent you, please. Big shout out to those guys. Aaron, before we wrap up, is there anything that you want to plug?
No, not at the moment. You know, as the season carries on, there'll be projects I'll be working on. But right now, I think I'm just kind of geared up, as we all are, for the next 3 weeks to see kind of what transpires, trade deadline, Magic, just the whole NBA in general. And then there'll be more to talk about from there.
And we'll definitely have Aaron back on soon. And on Thursday, I'm hosting guys from Locked On Cavs, as well as Philip Rossman Reich from the Magic and Josh Bowe from the Dallas Mavericks. And we're going to have a bit of a trade-a-palooza, talking buyers, sellers, what players we think everybody's going to leave. And it's very much in the mold of Nate Duncan provided the inspiration. Just four different guys, four different cities. Get a little nod to what the fan bases over there are thinking and are hoping for. And hopefully you guys will enjoy that. That'll be here on Thursday. For now, thank you to Aaron. Make sure you guys are following at OPP Magic Blog. That's our site, Orlando Pinstripe Post. And thanks for listening. This is Do You Believe in Magic? We hope you guys do. Talk to you soon.